Hi, my name is Tim Sales. Myself, along with Professor Charles King, are going to briefly go through a business model for you that works. With this model, I was able to build a business that does in excess of $25 million out of 24 different countries. Now, that's not that rare, but I did it with no employees, no accounts receivables, no accounts payable, and no inventory. Someone recently said to me, "That sounds too good to be true." My response back to him was, "Is that a good enough reason to stop looking?" He replied, "Probably not," and began doing his own due diligence. I recommend you to do the same. I got an email the other day that read, "We do all the work. You earn $10,000 a week." Professor King and I recognize that we live in a hype-driven society and that very often good educational content is overlooked, primarily because hype-based headlines are not used. So we hope you'll be able to recognize a professional business model when you hear one. While you're reviewing this information, please keep in mind the business knowledge and experience that this information is coming from. In addition to me building a $25 million company using this model, Dr. King received his doctorate from the Harvard Business School and is a professor of marketing at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He also teaches the business model we'll be discussing at the university. Professor King isn't just an academic. He also has a very large consulting business and has consulted some of the largest corporations in the world, companies like Blue Cross Blue Shields Associations of America, General Electric Corporation, General Motors, National Association of Realtors, Purdue University, Sears Roebuck & Company, Texas Instrument, U.S. Department of Energy, Westinghouse Electric Corporation, and over 100 other large to medium-sized corporations. We recognize that you're probably listening to this audio while you're doing some other activity, such as exercising or driving in your car, so you might have distractions. The information on this audio is taken from a 90-minute videotape under the same title called Brilliant Compensation. If there's anything you feel unclear about or don't understand, or you just want to watch it instead of listening, please ask the person who gave you this audio for the video version. Professor King is going to begin this explanation by educating you on what to look for in a business. Enjoy.
Tim and I felt it important to begin the explanation with four principles of business that are essential to any successful marketing strategy. The first of the four principles is to have a huge expanding market. If you were the best vinyl record producer in the world, would it matter today? No. It doesn't matter how good you are in an eroding industry. Every year, you would have to work harder to make the same amount of money. So the first principle is to focus on product or service categories that are huge and expanding. The second principle is to have unique and consumable products. I'll cover unique first. If you don't have a unique product, then you compete on price and convenience. Who has the best price? Who's closest to the customer? Yet if you have uniqueness, then people must come to you to get the product. If you don't have uniqueness, you must have a retention strategy to retain your customers. Next is consumable. If you have a non-consumable product, you're unemployed until your next sale. Success in business requires repeat sales of consumable products. Whether that's every time someone picks up the telephone, connects to the internet, renews a membership, turns on electricity, or gets to the bottom of a box or a bottle. You want those repeating commissions because they can pay multiple times for an initial effort.
Thank you, Dr. King. The third principle is timing. Primarily here, I'm talking about trends and timing. This is so critical for your financial well-being that you understand this little concept I'm going to share with you. During all cycles of the economy, there are people who are making money because of the trends and people who are losing money because of the same trends. How do you get in front of large trends? You study what creates them. Currently, the baby boom generation creates the largest trends in the world. The baby boomers are defined as a group of babies born immediately following World War II. So for an 18-year period of time between 1946 and 1964, there were 76 million babies born in the United States, a billion worldwide. I've likened the magnitude of all of those babies to a basketball moving through a garden hose. See, if you can predict where this basketball is going through the garden hose, you possess the ability to make fortunes. Let me say it another way. If you can predict what a billion people are going to want to buy, you can make a fortune. Let me give you some historical examples of the obvious buying patterns of these boomers. To start off with, what do a billion babies need and want? Baby food. Gerber sold almost 2 billion jars by the year of 1955. What's next? How about shoes and toys? Well, Buster Brown, Kenny Shoes, Mattel, and Hasbro got rich providing shoes and toys to this young group. I could continue with this, but I think you get the picture. Let's jump way ahead to when the boomers are in their mid-20s to early 30s. That was in the mid-1970s to early 1980s. Well, that was the biggest real estate boom of all time. Why? Because 1 billion people needed a home of their own. Now that you're very clear on how profitable these boomers can be, let me also share with you the downside. What happened in the late 1980s to the real estate boom? Fell through the floor, didn't it? Why? Because the majority of the boomers had already bought their homes. And the real estate market has been on a constant slide ever since. That's the difference between you building a business focused at the front of the basketball versus being at the back of the basketball. When you're in front of the basketball, you can be an average person and make extremely good money. But if you're marketing to the back of the basketball, you better be very good at what you do, because only the strong and very talented survive. What's our point? No matter what business you're in, your business really should be to be looking at what industries are expanding or which industries are about to expand. We recommend that you not have a loyalty to something just because you were educated in it or because you've been doing it for a long period of time. So let's bring the basketball to present time. The year is 2000. You've got 1 billion people between the ages of 36 and 54. Let's look at a couple of trends that are occurring today. Health, an obvious one. Looking younger, the boomers do not like what aging is doing to them. Retirement issues, security and money, and efficiencies. The boomers have always been enamored with technologies that make life easier for them. The fourth principle of business is to employ others so you get more done. There are really three main money-earning situations out there today. Number one, work for someone else, meaning someone employs you. Two, be a professional, doctor, dentist, attorney, accountant, engineer of some kind. And number three is to own your own business. In both one and two, you go out and you get an education in something and then exchange your knowledge and expertise for someone's dollars. The real problem with that formula is that if you're not exchanging expertise, you're not making any dollars. So you end up running yourself into the ground and working around the clock. The most common phrase is, I'm too busy, I don't have enough time. At this point, people either A, hide behind the TV or the internet and pretend the problem will go away, or B, they take full responsibility for their finances and start getting educated on what actually creates wealth. Here's an alarming statistic. The average 65-year-old male had more money in his bank account at the age of 18 than he does today. So I don't believe the problem goes away by ignoring it. And the third money-earning situation is to own your own business. 3/4, meaning 75%, of all the wealthy people did it through owning their own business. The fundamental reason this is statistically the straightest path to wealth is because of the ability to hire other people so you get more done. In every business, you'll find that sooner or later, you're going to run out of time or talent. When you try to do it all yourself, you can't. You absolutely must employ others so you can get more done. By employing others, you're leveraging off the efforts of other people. You can get more education in your chosen profession and raise your wage a little bit, but true wealth is beyond anyone's reach without the use of leverage through employing others. Let me break this down a little more. Wealth is created by either people at work or money at work. For example, $5 million earning 10% interest will give you approximately $500,000 a year. So whether you get out of bed or not, you're making $41,000 a month in residual income. In this case, you're leveraging off of your money. Your money's working for you. That's having money at work, which is the goal. But how does one get the money to put to work? By having people at work. Suppose you own a company and you employ just one person, me. I work for 8 hours on Monday, and you work for the same 8 hours on Monday that I do. Now pay close attention. You get paid on 16 hours worth of work because you take a portion of my productivity as income for yourself. You're leveraging off of my efforts because I'm your employee. So theoretically, the more employees you have working for you, the more leverage you have. That's people at work. However, let's bring some reality to this discussion. Have you ever had employees? If you have, you know that in theory, hiring employees sounds like a great way to achieve leverage, but it's very difficult to do. And the reason being is simple. No employee will ever work as hard for your company as you will because they don't own it. Employees tend to have more of a renter's mentality than an owner's mentality. How do you treat a rental car? If you spill a soda in the front seat, do you stop and shampoo the rug? I've heard it said that if you have one employee, you have one headache. If you have 100 employees, you run an adult daycare center. For you to get this true leverage of employing others so you get more done, you must create a situation where everyone has the same amount to gain. Then, and only then, will you have true leverage. One industry that sort of has this is the real estate industry. Let's say that I'm a real estate broker and I hire an agent named Robert. Robert sells a building. Robert earns 3% of the selling price of that building, and so do I, the broker. Why do I, the broker, earn a percentage when it was actually Robert who sold the building? Because I, the broker, did some of the advertising. I trained Robert. It's my office. I put up the risk. I did a lot of things. And so it's valid that I, as the broker, earn my money. But Robert doesn't work for me as an employee. He's an agent who works for himself. It's totally in the agent's interest to earn more money. This is a very important differentiation from an employee. If the broker wants more money, he or she just needs to hire and train more agents. My point is that the broker and the agent have the same amount to gain from the sale of the home, which is a form of leverage for the broker. The broker has people at work, but not in the form of an employee. Agents are far better than employees, but there's still a problem with this structure. You may have already picked up on it. The broker can have multiple agents, but the agents cannot. The broker has leverage, the agents don't, which creates a conflict until the agents begin to do what most brokers dread. What happens when I, the broker, have been real effective at teaching Robert to be a good agent? What's Robert going to want to do in a couple of years? Cut away and be his own broker, right? Is this good for me, the broker? No, because as soon as he becomes a broker, two bad things happen to me. One, he breaks away from me and I lose him as an income source. And two, worse than number one, he's now my competitor. Who trained this new competitor? I did. He obviously knows how I run my business, meaning that he knows all my good stuff. By the way, this doesn't just happen in the real estate industry. It happens in practically every industry. Have you ever heard the expression, "I'm just going to work there for experience"? Well, what does that mean? It means I'm going to strip them of their knowledge and then go do it myself. If you're a business owner, how many people have you trained who are no longer working for you? How many people have you trained to be your competitors? This gets worse. Let's say that Robert is now a broker right down the street. What will he do now that he's a broker? He'll go out and hire his own agents, right? And let's say one of those agents is named Linda. Linda also eventually wants to be a broker. So she becomes a competitor to me that I indirectly trained as well as Robert, who I directly trained. And this continues on and on. I, the broker, actually created a chain of competitors that I trained. Is this an intelligent way to expand business? Absolutely not. What if we did something entirely different? Let's say instead, I, the broker, am going to encourage Robert to be a broker. I want him to become a broker from day one. Trying to hold Robert back or not showing Robert all my best marketing methods is the wrong action. The only way that you or I can ever retain a leader is to provide him or her with the same opportunity for growth that we have. Which is why I earlier stated that the only way to have true leverage is when you have a structure where everyone has the same amount to gain. So from day one, I'm going to encourage Robert to be a broker. And when he does, he doesn't break away from me and become my competitor. Robert just shifts from agent to broker, which now allows Robert to hire his own agents, just as I have done. I'm going to continue earning a percentage of what Robert and his agents sell, and shouldn't I? I trained him. I put up the risks. It's my office, and all the reasons I mentioned earlier. Now, the percentage I earn from Robert and his organization should be smaller than when he was my agent, but I should still earn a percentage. Why would you or I work with Robert's agents? Because it's in our financial interest. The more money that Robert's agents make, the more money we make. The more money Robert makes, the more money we make. That's our continued incentive to always help Robert and his agents. So it's a win-win for all parties involved. Now, some people hear this and say, gosh, isn't that one of those pyramids? And what's the perception of a pyramid? People at the top make all the money and the people down below do all the work, right? Isn't that the perception of a pyramid? Professor King, explain why this is not a pyramid and why people at the top don't necessarily make all the money.
Let me make a quick point before I discuss the pyramid issue. It is not the geometric shape that people have a problem with. This geometric shape is probably the shape of your family tree. It's the shape of our government. To the architect, it's the strongest structure known to man. Every organizational structure in the world is this shape. So the shape isn't the problem. However, let me point something out about the perception people at the top earn all the money. Here's a typical corporation. At the top, you have a CEO, which stands for Chief Executive Officer. Does the president earn more money than the CEO in the typical corporation? Not normally. How about the president? Do any of the vice presidents earn more money than the president? No. What would happen if some of the vice presidents made more money than the president? Really, what would happen? Total confusion. This structure is called delegation. The reason why the president can tell the vice president what to do is because the president makes more money. Each level of the corporate structure earns less income. That's called a chain of command. The corporate structure is this. People at the top making the majority of the money, and the people at the bottom do not. There's not anyone in the lower ranks of Kodak that gets a $25 million pay raise in a year. In fact, no employee even submits a resume requesting it. But George Fisher, the CEO, can because he has people at work. The CEO of every corporation is leveraging off the productivity of all of the employees that work for the corporation. The unfairness is the CEO is the only one with leverage. In the model that we suggest as being more intelligent, you, the individual, are given the same opportunity to have leverage just as every CEO does. The structure that we've found that allows this is sometimes referred to as network marketing. Remember when Tim said earlier that to reach true leverage, you must create a situation where everyone has the same amount to gain? Well, that's what we've just described. Tim's going to show you what makes the network marketing structure the absolute fairest structure available.
In most network marketing companies, everyone can earn a certain number of levels deep in the organization they build. Everyone in the company can earn that same number of levels deep, like maybe 4 levels deep or 6 levels deep. Occasionally, network marketing companies pay an infinity bonus on certain activities in the compensation plan, but for the most part, it cuts off at a certain depth. I'm going to use 4 levels for a quick example of why network marketing has a more fair structure. If you build a larger, meaning more people, or more productive organization, meaning you sell more products, than me, you would earn more money than me, even if you were in my organization. Picture that I bring you into my business and you build an organization 4 levels deep below me. Your 4th level will be my 5th level. Meaning that I don't get paid on your 4th level. Your 4th level is beyond my reach. By the way, in a mature organization, the majority of your volume would be on the 4th level. Sometimes more volume than on your 1st, 2nd, and 3rd levels combined. There are people in my organization right now that earn more money than I do. Do you know what I call that? Fair. Shouldn't it be that way? Study any structure you like. Shouldn't the most productive person in that structure make the most money? Of course. Normally, the measuring stick for compensation is an impressive resume or years of seniority. What does an impressive resume or years of seniority have to do with productivity? Nothing. If you bring more profits to a company or organization, then you deserve more profits than anyone else, right? Well, that's what network marketing is all about. Professor King, how did you become involved with teaching network marketing at the University of Illinois?
In 1990, we had a major economic recession in the United States. The Midwest and Chicago particularly were very badly hit. As a result, the interviewers stopped coming to campus. We were graduating hundreds of students a semester, and they weren't getting jobs. Our alumni were coming back to us, losing their jobs, looking for help. We had nothing to offer. Now, I started looking, because of my background in business consulting, at alternative career paths. I went out and I looked at starting your own business and home-based businesses. I looked at franchising. I looked at direct selling. And in the direct selling arena, I backed into network marketing. Now, I was very cynical, skeptical. Tim, I was negative about network marketing. They don't teach network marketing at the Harvard Business School, and I didn't know much about it. The end result was that one of my students who was on the team asked me, "Why are you so negative about network marketing?" I looked at that young man and I said, "Son, I know enough to know I don't want to know any more." That student looked at me and he said, "Professor, if I gave you that answer to that question with no more information than you have, you would give me an F." I turned to him and said, "Son, you're absolutely right. I have no basis for that conclusion. You just made an A." As a result, we went to the library, we went to meetings, and for the next 6 months, we did due diligence on the network marketing industry. I visited the top companies, I talked to network marketing leaders, I became an evangelist. In 1990-91, we started teaching network marketing in the marketing curriculum at the university.
And that's coming from a Harvard Business School graduate who was a true skeptic, but through due diligence, he learned the truth. Why would Microsoft, AT&T, Citibank, MCI, IBM, Toyota, Xerox, General Motors, General Electric, Oracle, Sun Microsystems, Coca-Cola, and many others distribute some or all their products and services through network marketing? These large corporations are firm testimony to the industry's success and credibility. The majority of these corporations have started working with network marketing companies just in the past few years. That confirms what Professor King was saying about that this industry has come of age and is now a true profession. Think about why it's a good business decision for these companies to distribute products through the network marketing channels. Consider the steps it would take a company like AT&T to get a cell phone into the customer's hands. They would first need to advertise. Television, newspapers, magazines, banner ads, billboards, mailings. How much money have they spent? Millions. Before one phone is sold to a customer. Then they need to hire and train a call center to field all the calls from the advertisements. How much money does that cost them? How many phones have they sold? None yet. Then they need to hire and train the sales reps to connect the phone with a person. How much money does it take to hire and train that sales force? A lot. How many phones have sold? None yet. Contrast this with AT&T joint venturing with a network marketing company, and all the network marketing company needs to do is send an email to all of their brokers and agents, or send a phone message, and immediately 50, 75, 100,000 brokers and agents buy the phone. Then all these brokers start training the agents on how to market the phone. With a network marketing channel, when does AT&T spend money? Only when a phone is sold. That's why so many corporations have been joint venturing with network marketing companies and why this trend is just beginning. We'd like to cover one last topic, which we feel is one of the most important points. Has it ever occurred to you that there are people who earn $10,000 a year, and there are also people in that same year who earn $10 million a year, yet they both have 24 hours a day? What does Group 1 not know that Group 2 does know? Do you think that Group 2 is 1,000 times busier? You need to understand the difference. If there's any place that I see people absolutely blow their chances of ever creating wealth, it's in their understanding or failure to understand the time-productivity connection. This phrase I'm going to share with you is what I believe to be the number one reason people never reach their financial dreams. Here's the phrase. It's easier to just do it myself than try to get others to do it. Or it's quicker to do it myself than try to get others to do it. The reason people are so busy and don't have enough time is that they lack the true understanding of what a powerful investment it is to train others so you get more done. People fail at executing this because normally, in traditional business, it's not rewarding to train others your expertise because they'll take it and profit without you. But in network marketing, you're rewarded exponentially for your willingness to train others effectively. Please memorize this quote. Wealth is hidden from those who must do it all themselves. Wealth exposes itself to those patient enough to train others. Suppose you have a 4-year-old son. His shoestrings are untied. You've got a choice. You can tie his shoes for him. It'll be done quicker. Or you can teach him how. Yes, it'll take more time, and he'll ignore you and get frustrated, but get creative. Have him hold one of the strings while you tie around it. Keep doing that for an hour or a day or a few weeks, and he'll be trying to get the other string out of your hand so he can do it himself. When he finally does it himself, his knot won't hold. Keep teaching him. Because very soon you will have built a little guy with pride. You've also leveraged yourself so that you don't have to tie his shoes 5 to 10 times a day. I might also include that what's most important here is that this is as much your teaching lesson as it is his learning lesson. Your child will learn to tie a shoe when you learn to teach him. My point in all of this is that by taking the time to train others successfully, you leverage yourself. Shoestrings are still getting tied, but not by you. That's because you invested your time by training others versus expending your time by doing things the quicker way. That's what the wealthy know and implement. Network marketing is the most ethical business I've ever seen. It actually builds people when done correctly. Now, with that understanding, you can see why I refer to network marketing as brilliant compensation. In network marketing, what you teach and train others to do is duplicate what you do, which is to find and train others. If you think about it, this is actually multiplying your efforts, not just duplicating your efforts. That's why I say that next to your spiritual growth and your family, there is nothing you can do that rewards you better than investing your time in network marketing. Let me give you a personal example of this. I have 56,000 people in my organization worldwide. If each of those people worked 1 hour out of a year, I would be paid on 56,000 hours. For the typical workaholic to earn on 56,000 hours, he would have to work for 6 years, 24 hours a day, to do what I could do in 1 hour out of a whole year. Doesn't seem fair, does it? It's definitely not fair. What's not fair is that you haven't understood this until today and other people have. But now that you understand it, take responsibility for this new knowledge. Don't go trying to create reasons why you can't do this. You can do this. When I started, I was an underwater bomb squad technician for the U.S. Navy. I lived a lifetime in the 10 years I spent there, but I had no business experience and my communication skills were zero. There's a vocabulary in the Navy that doesn't work in business. As a matter of fact, it doesn't work anywhere. Was it hard to learn all that I had to learn to be successful? You bet. But whatever I do, I'm going to work hard at it, just like you. The difference is, am I going to earn a residual income off of what I'm doing, or is it a temporary income? The reason Dr. King and I created this audio is to provide solid answers and to fully expose the power of this industry. We see people struggling. We see people unhappy in their careers, and it shouldn't be. We see people wishing to spend more time with their family. We see people working themselves to death trying to get ahead. We see people selling their dignity to a company. People are moving to places they don't want to live. But the thought that sickens me more than any other is thinking of a newly downsized person dressing up in their suit to go pass out resumes. You know why that sickens me? Because they haven't learned their lesson yet. They're still buying the lie of corporate security. They haven't learned that the only job security there is when you're looking at the boss in the mirror. My girlfriend and I recently went out to dinner with some of our friends, and one of them has 2 master's degrees and has been job interviewing for over 2 years all over the country and has not found a job. I asked him if he's ever considered owning his own business. His response was astounding. He said, "Tim, I'm the kind of person who likes the steady paycheck. I like to know where my checks are coming from each week. I'm not entrepreneurial like you." Well, to this day, I don't know how I made it through dinner. I surely couldn't eat because my jaw was on the floor. He not only didn't have a steady paycheck, he hadn't had a paycheck in over 2 years. But he still believes there's security in working for somebody else. Who keeps telling him that lie? The difference between the wealthy and everyone else is leverage. Either you have it or your boss has it. You've got to understand that. And there is nothing that gives you, the individual, leverage in such an ethical way like network marketing can. Is network marketing perfect? Of course not. Nothing is. Every industry has its good and bad. Network marketing just has more good than any other industry for the most number of people. Will it require you to work hard? Absolutely. Is it worth it? Absolutely. Picture what it could be like to not have any money concerns. Picture what it could be like not to wake up to an alarm clock ever again, nor sit in traffic again. Picture going on vacation and returning if you choose. Every bit of that is available in network marketing. Professor King and I sincerely appreciate the time you devoted to this explanation, and we hope it's been educational for you.